As the Tigers gear up for Mississippi State, basketball takes center stage as Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays invade SEC Media Days. Tigers picked third. Meanwhile, the offensive line continued to draw raves for its effort against the Florida Gators. Is this a trap game for the Tigers? The Raging Cajuns need a win on the road. It's the old rival Arkansas State, and the Red Wolves very good at home throughout the course of this series. The Saints going up to Chicago in the Windy City. Can they make it 5-0 without number 9? And the biggest games in college football. We'll break it down with Michael Huguenin. Today, Hump Day, Wednesday, October 16th, 2019.
First pitch, and that's hit in the air and pretty deep to left center field. Racing back, Gardner, still going back at the wall, looking up, see you later! Into the bullpen, Jose Altuve with his 12th career postseason homer, and the Astros go up 1-0.
Nothing Nationals, bottom of the first. Swinging a fly ball, left field, toward the line. Ozuna on the run, can't get there. Drops in for a base hit. Scoring is Robles, behind him coming in from second is Gomes on a single left. Two runs batted in for Trey Turner.
I just feel really blessed to be here. I mean, I was here last year with two Cy Young Award winners, and I was sandwiched in between their lockers. And then towards the end of the year, Granke likes his space, so he's down on the corner. I don't get sandwiched in between two, but we still have two Cy Young Award winners and an MVP on the pitching staff 2 years in a row. So, I mean, geez, what a fortunate position for me to be in. There's so many opportunities to learn, and I just feel really blessed.
Everyone, good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for dialing us up here on 103.7 The Game, the Wednesday edition of the Jordy Hultberg Show. One season comes to an end for my beloved St. Louis Cardinals, swept out of the way by the Washington Nationals. What a pitching staff they've got. Meanwhile, the Astros and the Yankees have to wait a day to resume their playoff series. As you heard Clint say earlier on, a washout today, but the Astros get it done yesterday. The Hoss did it again. Gerrit Cole and Altuve and company getting it done with the bat, and they cruise to a nice win. And this sets up really good now for the Astros. A day off. Now Greinke gets his regular rest. He's due to come back, and he's due to have a good game for the Stros. And then you know who's coming up. Verlander after that, and then we'll go from there. So a fortuitous day for the Astros, a rainout today. So good for them. Meanwhile, on the NFL, Jalen Ramsey traded for two first-round draft picks in successive years to the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams are throwing caution to the wind, and all of a sudden, miraculously, Jalen Ramsey's back is healed. And in all likelihood, he's going to play this Sunday. Couldn't play when he was with Jacksonville. No. But all of a sudden he gets traded. He says he's overjoyed with the trade to the Rams. That's not the Rams' trouble. The Rams' trouble is their offensive line. I still don't think they're making the playoffs this year. But that's another story for another day. Joe Maddon didn't take him long, as we all expected. Parting of the ways with the Chicago Cubs. Now he's going to be named as the new California Angels manager. So there you go. And a golfer who was unaware of a rule got 58 penalty strokes. That's right. 58 penalty strokes. Now, you know, you gotta know the rules, and the rules have changed since the last time Leanne Walker competed in an LPGA sanctioned event. She found out the hard way because she allowed her caddy to line up putts for her and she had to add 42 penalty shots to her opening round in Frankschlick, Indiana, 16 more in the second round. She got scores of 127 and 90. Caddies can no longer stand behind players as they putt unless a player starts the stance over again. So learn it the hard way. 127, that sounds kind of like some of my rounds of golf. All right, let me tell you what we have coming up on the program today. It's a big, big game. It's a Thursday nighter, and the Raging Cajuns have to go on the road. And the road has not fared well for them against Arkansas State in Jonesboro. The home team has dominated this series for the past 20 years. Matt Stoltz is the play-by-play voice of Arkansas State. They're bad defensively. They are really bad. The injury bug has hurt them and has hit them. And they're really bad. They're the worst in the league. So can the Raging Cajuns take advantage of it? The answer to this game is run the football, ball control, keep the ball out of the hands of Arkansas State because they can throw it. They've got a plethora of wide receivers. Keep them off the field, and the Cajuns should get a win, and they need a win on that. LSU goes to Mississippi State. A lot of people saying this is a trap game. I don't believe in all that stuff. I think talent comes to the forefront. I think LSU is by far, hands down, 10,000 times better than Mississippi State. They've got troubles in Starkville. LSU's a 18-point favorite in the ball game. Chris Truax will join us. We'll talk about the offensive line and how all of a sudden Sadiq Charles, after the big matchup against Florida, goes from first team. Now he goes back down to third string, one of those coaches' decisions. But we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the adjustments that Dave Aranda made and the Heisman chase for one Joe Burrow. How high is he going in the NFL draft now? I mean, he is catapulting himself into millions and millions of dollars. In hour number two after Hot Topics, John Hendricks will join us. The Saints trying to go 5-0 without Drew Brees, taking on a once formidable Chicago Bear defense that struggled of late. They got beat by the Oakland Raiders in London. Then they had a week off, and now they're getting ready. They're back at Soldier Field. What's the weather going to be like? What's the temperature going to be like? Do we get good Teddy Bridgewater? Do we get not so good Teddy Bridgewater? One thing for sure, two really, really good defenses that have come to play. What's the health status of Alvin Kamara? We don't know. They're saying he has a high ankle issue, but expects to play. So we shall see about that. And then Michael Huguenin will join us. We'll go through all the big games in college football. There's about, I don't know, there's a bunch of undefeated teams still out there, but they're dwindling. They're dwindling, no question about that. App State's one of them, and they entered the top 25 at number 24. There's 12 unbeaten teams left in major college football, and two of them are poised to meet up in that first week of November. Number one, Alabama. Number two, LSU. LSU's got to get past Mississippi State, then they've got to get past Auburn, and then we can set our sights on Alabama. A lot of work yet to be done, but LSU with their 48 plays for 511 total yards Saturday in that 42-28 win over Florida, averaged 10.6 yards per play. According to LSU Sports Information Department, that was the highest average in LSU history against both a ranked opponent and an SEC opponent, and it was the third highest per play average in any LSU game. Wow. Joe Burrow has a chance now. The Heisman watch is on him. He gets to take on Mississippi State. Nobody has taken care of Florida defense the way Burrow did on Saturday. He's got some challenges ahead. I think Florida had the best overall defense. I think Auburn has the best defensive line. And Alabama, well, that's just, they're Alabama. They're always going to be good. And has been the case for most of the last decade. The ultimate test of LSU's legitimacy as a title contender and for Burrow's Heisman candidacy will come November 9th against Alabama. But first things first, Mississippi State. First things first on our show, We're going to talk with Matt Stoltz, the play-by-play voice of the Arkansas State Red Wolves. We'll give a primer to tomorrow's big-time nationally televised ball game on ESPNU between the Raging Cajuns and the Red Wolves. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. We'll take a timeout. More to come here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Are you looking for the latest updates on what is happening with the UL Raging Cajuns? Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we got another midweek game, and coming up on Thursday, the Raging Cajuns will be at Allison Field at Centennial Bank Stadium in Jonesboro, Arkansas, for a 6:30 kickoff on ESPNU against their rival, Arkansas State. Matt Stoltz is the play-by-play voice of the Red Wolves on the Red Wolves Sports Network, and he's kind enough to join us today. Matt, always a pleasure talking with you, buddy. How are you?
Jordy, doing well. It's great to be on with you again.
Well, it's a rivalry matchup and two teams that put on quite a show a year ago, but what a season this has been. How has the team, how has the university, how has everyone, poor Blake Anderson, my goodness gracious, losing his wife, such tragic, losing Wendy, but how has everybody adapted and adjusted to this?
Well, it's been a very trying first half of the season, to say the least. I could probably write a book just on everything that's happened over the course of the last couple of months. And it's been amazing just the way Blake Anderson has handled this. He's shown his faith through this entire process. And, it was a two-year battle for Wendy Anderson, battling with breast cancer, and she passed away a couple of weeks before the start of the season, and just the reaction from around the country has been amazing in support of Blake. Yeah. And he had a leave of absence for a couple of weeks, missed the first game of the season against SMU, and it's been a situation where not only that has happened and having to deal with that off the field, but the on-the-field issues have been unlike anything I've ever seen. Just all the injuries that have taken a toll on this team. And, we've been without nine starters this season, and seven of those have been all-conference caliber players. So it's been a challenge, to say the least, and to be sitting at 3-3 right now, considering everything they've been through, is probably a little bit of an accomplishment in itself.
And Matt Stoltz, play-by-play voice of Arkansas State. A lot of those injuries have occurred on the defensive side of the ball. And golly, against Georgia State, in a 52-38 loss, gave up 722 yards. I mean, you got to play with the hand you're dealt with. You don't have much depth, and of that depth, it's not very quality depth at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think Jordy, you've seen it long enough watching Sunbelt Conference football. It's a good league. It really is. But, the biggest difference between leagues like the Sunbelt and Power 5 conferences are, the difference between the ones and twos, just the depth. And, we have some very good players that are starters, not only on this Arkansas State team, but also with the Cajuns and throughout the league. The league has been very good, but there's such a big gap between the ones and the twos, as opposed to schools like Alabama and Georgia and LSU, where, it's kind of that next man up philosophy. You can plug in another four or five star recruit. It's just not the case on this level. And yes, you look at that defensive line in particular, and Arkansas State has had four defensive tackles go down, and we were without our top two defensive tackles the last couple of weeks. One is out for the season. Forrest Merrill is the best nose guard in the league and probably one of the better nose guards in the entire country. He's out for the year with a torn bicep. The guy right next to him is Kevin Thurman. He's missed the last couple of games with a broken hand. So those are two big-time losses, and then you got a couple of guys behind them that are out for the season now. And the Red Wolves had to go without one of their linebackers last week in Derion Jackson. And, you know, in week three against Georgia, they were without they lost Jerry Jacobs, who was the best corner in the league the last couple of years. So he's out for the season, and then that's a huge blow to your secondary. So, you know, the Red Wolves have really, really tried these last 12 days or so to try to figure out some answers defensively.
Matt Stoltz, the play-by-play voice for Arkansas State, the Raging Cajuns, and the Red Wolves, 6:30 kickoff Thursday night, national television. So with the defense being down like it is and ninth in the Sun Belt Conference in scoring defense, last in the 10-team conference in total defense, giving up 536 yards a game, that tells me you got to outscore people. You guys can pitch it and catch it. A very good wide receiver core. Give us some names to be on the lookout for.
Well, you got to start with Omar Bayless, and he's a senior who's having just a season that's off the charts to this point. Through the first half of the year, he's leading the nation in receiving yards. He's leading the nation in receiving touchdowns. He's the school's all-time leader in touchdowns for a career. And look, Jordy, we're six games into the season. He already has 10 touchdown catches this year, which ties a single-season school record. So that kind of tells you exactly, you know, what kind of season he's having. And, you know, we expect him to be playing on Sundays next year. And then the guy right next to him, Kirk Merritt, is a Destrehan native. He's a guy that is just fantastic. He was newcomer of the year last year in the Sun Belt, and he's having a very solid season as well. So really, with all the injuries, and the Red Wolves have lost, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the league and Logan Bonner for the season. He tore a ligament in his thumb and has been out since week four. You know, that was a big blow. But what's been the saving grace of this team is the receiving core, and they're hands down the best receiving core in this league.
You know what you're going to get from the Raging Cajuns? They've got that three-headed monster. They love to run the football. App State, the only school out there that's really – and they're the best team in the Sun Belt. They were the only team that's been able to slow that running game down a little bit. How does Arkansas State, with all the injuries, plan on rallying the troops and try to stop that vaunted running game?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and one that I'm sure Blake Anderson and – his defensive staff have spent the last 12 days trying to figure out. I mean, this is a very, very good football team when it comes to running the football. And, you know, that's no secret. I mean, they had success against the Red Wolves a season ago. And, you know, one thing the Cajuns did really well last year was not only run the football, but they got the football to the running backs. They threw it to them out of the backfield. Elijah Mitchell had six catches for over 120 yards last year in that game in Lafayette. So they did a good job at kind of swinging it out to the running backs and letting them do some things in space. And that's another thing that the Red Wolves are going to have to try to prevent come Thursday night.
It's a Thursday night game. I mean, that means kids have school the next day and parents have work, and there's all kind of after-school activities. What kind of crowd do you expect at Centennial Bank Stadium?
Well, you know, I know the Cajuns had 21-something for their game last week against Appalachian State, and it was a big game. I would hope we'd be somewhere in that same neighborhood for our game tomorrow night. Now, one thing that is kind of happening locally in the Jonesboro area is a lot of kids have, you know, the teacher in-service day coming up on Friday. So with all that stuff going on, it does help a little bit. Hopefully some more families will be able to come out to the game tomorrow night. But at the same time, while it is a good showcase for the league anytime they play a midweek game and are able to get that national television exposure, there's always that trade-off because you know going in that the crowd's probably not going to be as big as if it were on a Saturday.
Yeah, no question about that. But you, You got to get the exposure. It's good. It's good for the league. So when you sum it all up, these two teams have had some classic matchups in years gone by. It's a great rivalry game. It's a very important game for both schools. What are the keys for Arkansas State in this one?
Well, the number one key is just the schedule itself. You know, you mentioned the rivalry. It's been amazing over the years, the fact that the home team has just dominated this series the way that they have. And you go back over the last 28 years, the home team has won all but three times. So the fact that A-State has this game at home is certainly an advantage in itself. But look, there's no secret. The Red Wolves have to find some things out, have to figure some things out defensively, figure out how to try to slow down that Cajun run game as much as they can, not let the Cajuns control the clock. And if they do that, then the Red Wolves, as you mentioned, certainly have the firepower to put plenty of points on the board. And, you know, I think the Red Wolves just need to get some stops, get a few stops to where they can give their offense a chance to hopefully outscore the Cajuns come tomorrow night. But, yeah, that's a big if trying to stop that Cajun run game, especially the way the Red Wolves performed last time out.
Matt, you're very gracious with your time, buddy. I greatly appreciate it. Have fun Thursday night, the Cajuns and the Red Wolves. Thank you so much again.
Hey, it's the Red Wolves and Cajuns. That's always fun. So we're looking forward to it.
There you go. All right, Matt. There you go. Matt Stoltz, play-by-play voice of the Arkansas State Red Wolves. How about that? Should be a good one. We'll see what happens. They're pretty good on midweek games. Now, we've got another giveaway to give to you. Compliments of 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. We want to send you to the circus. You can win a family four-pack of tickets to the Carson and Barnes Circus this weekend at the Northgate Mall. Just text CIRCUS, C-I-R-C-U-S, to 68683. That's CIRCUS to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to the Carson and Barnes Circus this weekend. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax after this timeout. The Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on The Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, let's go in the trenches. Brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. The perfect RV park located in southwest Louisiana, specifically Hackberry, Louisiana. Catering to all LNG lodgers. It's world-class fishing, hunting, and bird watching right there. It's a great place to go. True Lodging RV Park. Chris Truax, a former LSU offensive lineman, college football coach, and our analyst here each and every Wednesday afternoon at this time joins us. And Chris, we talked about it. How would the offensive line fare against Florida? Well, ran the ball effectively, no sacks, threw the ball effectively. By far, the Tigers' best performance. Good afternoon, my friend. And how in the Sam Hill did they do it?
Brother, I tell you what, my hat's off to that coaching staff and to both the offensive line and the defensive line. Those guys were ready to play. And I tell you what, truly made me a believer this weekend. We've got a really good football team in Baton Rouge, Jordy.
I think you're absolutely right. LSU had 22 first downs, scored 42 points on only 48 plays, and gave up zero sacks. And look, Coach O talked about it, and a lot of coaches talk about it, but he's practicing what he preaches. They're 50-50 all year long with the pass and the run, so pick your poison.
Jordy, I'm with you. You know, what I love about Coach O, you're exactly right. He told us, fan base, alumni, whatever, haters, naysayers, whatever, listen, we're going to spread the ball, and we're going to get our most talented people on the field, and we're going to get our most production done on Saturday nights. So So what did he do? He went and got an offensive guy, you know, off the New Orleans Saints staff, and got a quarterback with Joe Burrow, who he's blessed to inherit. Because I mean, that's where it all starts and ends with that quarterback. And you know, Burrow put himself, no doubt, knee deep in the Heisman race. So I hope LSU does a fantastic job of marketing him and branding him, because you know it's hard to win a Heisman in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You know.
Yeah, it sure is. Chris Truex, kind enough to join us. The offensive numbers are off the charts, and I don't ever remember an LSU team that only faced third down four times in a game. I mean, they're picking up 10 yards a pop. It's ridiculous.
Chunks of yards. What'd they average, 8 to 9 yards per play, something like that?
About 10.6. 10.6.
Unbelievable. And a bunch of explosive plays against a vaunted, at least we thought was a vaunted, Florida defense that we had a lot of respect for going into the game. And, you know, with LSU right now, it needs to be the number one team in the country. I mean, they've got two of the biggest wins out of anybody in the country besides University of Texas and University of Florida. But as you well know, you know, it's going to shake out here in a few weeks. We're rolling to Tuscaloosa.
Absolutely. No question about that. We got to get past a couple little landmines. I'm not too concerned. Well, you know, Mississippi State's not a very good ball club by any stretch of the imagination. If we just come in there and do what we're supposed to do, we'll take care of business. But I was dying to – I wish I could have been inside your brain to when you saw LSU's defense against Florida. I kept saying – I know we're trying to stop the run, but when are we going to put some pressure on this quarterback? Trask looked like he was a Heisman Trophy candidate in the first half.
No, in the first half, I agree with you, man. He was really played a disciplined ball game, had his eyes downfield, was playing a really high percentage odds on offensive plays with his production out there. And then whatever happened, I don't know if Tyler Shelvin ate like a case of Oreos at halftime or something like that.
Whatever happened, they started blitzing, and the numbers certainly skewed their way. Have you ever – I mean, you've been around. You've played in there. You've seen some of the biggest games there. That stadium was at its best. We may have lost Chris in Hackberry, Louisiana. We'll effort to get him back on the air. But it's amazing. Big game, Sadiq Charles starting, back in the lineup now. Per reports, Dare Rosenthal worked as the first team left tackle in yesterday's practice, while the usual starter, Sadiq Charles, worked with the third team. So Charles has already missed three games due to, quote, coach's decision. So I don't know what Sadiq Charles did, but obviously he's got some more time to serve. But guess what? He's going to serve it now. He's not going to serve it next week against Auburn, I can promise you. And he's not going to serve it the following week against Alabama. Glad to get you back in there. I was just mentioning, Al, it's funny how you coaches, when you deem discipline, Sadiq Charles started against Florida, and now with Mississippi State coming, he's back on the third team with Derek Rosenthal starting as the first team left tackle. So he's still got some time to serve, but he's going to be there when Auburn comes to town. I can promise you that.
You're right, and I hope that guy puts up his childish ways or bad decision-making and some of those upperclassmen really kind of lean on that young man and tell him how dynamic a young man and player he is and what he can do to help us win a championship. We need him off the field because it's still getting that congruency, Jordy. You still need those five guys, just like on that basketball court in your world, you know, having that five guys with that same rhythm. And we need him out there. It was great to get our left guard back out there a little bit now. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But, you know, and I thought our right tackle really played extremely well. I always kind of worry about our right tackle. Yeah, Deculus. I always worry about him. He's kind of got some slow feet, and he opens his hip, and those defensive ends kind of turn on him and then shrink that pocket a little bit. But that young man had a nice ball game, too. So I know we were talking about Tyler Shelvin before I lost you on the phone. And my hat's off to that young man. Maybe he's finally getting into football shape and the game shape and to go out there. How many total plays did the defense play? You mentioned 48 on offense. You
know they Florida had over 80. Florida had over 80.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought that. You know, that's amazing. So that's a lot of plays for our defense to play. And
All right, Chris Truax, once again. There you go. There you go. We keep losing you in and out. That's all right.
I'm sorry.
We got you now. We got you.
I'm sitting here at True Lodger, man, working a little bit. You got me stationary. My point being, those guys, our defense looked like they were in the best game shape of the year. I think that has a lot to do with being in Baton Rouge, being a night game, and being off the energy and the karma at Tiger Stadium.
It was a great environment, no question. And look, in the big games, big players step up. Burrow was terrific, 21 of 24, no interception. He was terrific. I thought Caleb Onchaisan had his best game as an LSU Tiger, and that young pup Stingley, even though they picked on him, in the end he got the last laugh with that incredible interception in the end zone.
How about that? Is that player, coach, or scheme? I mean, I take a player every time because I promise you they're not working on that on individual drills.
That's right. That's right. You can't coach some of those things, man. It's amazing.
You sure
Mississippi State, you've been there. The Cowbells, they're struggling of late. This is one of those games where I believe if you jump out early, you take control of this thing, Mississippi State will hang their head. It'll be over with. But it's the typical cliche. If you let them hang around long enough, you never know. But they can't outscore LSU. There's no way.
You know, but Jordy, you're right. This might be a trap game. You're going on the road. This will show kind of what kind of leadership we have and locker room leadership of the players and what kind of direction and guidance and focus that our coaching staff can make sure our guys are ready to go. You know, Mississippi State doesn't really have an identity at quarterback this year. And that's, you know, where they're struggling at that. And, you know, they lost two first-rounders last year off their defense. So, right. I mean, yeah, they're kind of trying to find an identity for themselves. And unfortunately for them, the road doesn't get any more, you know, easier for them in Stark Vegas this weekend.
Nah, no question. Chris Truax, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park right there in Hackberry, Louisiana. It's a hunter and fisherman and a bird-watching paradise out there. So, gee whiz, all the stars are lining up, right? I mean, golly sakes alive. You've got after State, you got Auburn, and then a little bye week, and then off to Tuscaloosa we go with national championship playoff implications involved, and certainly a Heisman Trophy candidacy involved. And I never in my wildest dreams, that's something that never entered my mind heading into this season. I thought we'd be good. I never thought we'd have a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Well, you know, Jordy, we were talking about that this past weekend going, think about it, Burrow couldn't get the starting job at Ohio State. Or maybe he could have if he would have stuck around. But I'm sure glad he chose LSU because he has been the difference. And, you know, it was nice to see some of those young running backs get on the field and have a nice productive day as well, too.
Right.
But obviously, this season's going to come and fold, and with Burrow and Tua down the road, I mean, I tell you what, it's going to be just a spectacular game. But between that, we've got the Bulldogs to worry about, and then we've got Arkansas, and then we roll into Tuscaloosa, and then shake it out with Texas A&M, right? How about Jimbo Fisher? I mean, good Lord, he's, you know, guaranteed. He's the smartest guy in the league right now, guaranteed money, and they don't look real good right now.
Now, I'm with you. I'm glad you mentioned running backs. And the young pups, that's great. Davis was terrific. But maybe the most underrated running back in the league is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And some of the moves he makes and the holes that he was running through, my goodness gracious, he's undervalued.
Jordy, he is, and I'll be the first one to say that I have undervalued that young man. You know, he's a very consistent player. Seems like an even-keeled kind of kid, too. Doesn't get too high, get too low, runs with square pads in the line of scrimmage, understands the way the offensive line is blocking. But, you know, that's what you're getting, a senior running back, too. He knows all the schemes, the protections, and obviously how the offensive line are blocking certain run plays. And he's got really great patience to the hole, and he explodes through the hole. So my hat's off to him. I'm glad he's having a great year.
To the point, leads the SEC with 7 rushing touchdowns, and he's averaging. Now, this is a pass-happy offense, but he's averaging 120 yards a game, 8.89 yards per carry in SEC games. So a lot of more SEC games to come, but he has delivered big time. So no trap game here. Right? I can't. No, it's not going to be a trap game. LSU's going to take care of this. They're an 18-point favorite.
What are they? How big a favorite are they?
18.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, LSU's covering. I'll tell you that. They've been covering.
my main man, Chris Truax, in the trenches, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. Enjoy the rest of your week, my man. I'm sure it's beautiful out there in Hackberry. The weather's turning better. It's going to be great.
Amen, brother. Have a great week, Jordy. Thank you, man.
All right, you're the best. Chris Truax, again, remembered 6,450,000 viewers watch the LSU-Florida game, ESPN's the network's most watched college football game in nearly 2 years. It peaked at 7.428 million viewers in the second half in the top viewing market, my hometown of New Orleans, with a 30.6 rating. Not too shabby. And oh, by the way, second, they're watching because they care, Birmingham, Alabama, 27.6 rating. How about that? All right. We'll take a timeout. It was SEC Basketball Media Day going on today. Will Wade brought Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays, the BR backcourt, went to Birmingham. And we'll hear from Skylar Mays after this timeout. The Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
Hey, we welcome you back. ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets always welcomes you to their establishment. They've got 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. If you're not a Buku Rewards member yet, what's taking you so long? It takes about 30 seconds to sign up, and you will reap the benefits daily with all the discounts they have throughout their store. Become a Buku Rewards member and go see all the great savings with all the great products that ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets have. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, I'm telling you, you just can't shop right at all. One little note here, according to our friend Luke Johnson, friend of the program with The Advocate, the Saints have signed running back Zach Zenner. He played 3 years with the Detroit Lions. Now he's the latest member of the New Orleans Saints. Played college football at South Dakota State, went undrafted in 2015, played 2015 through 2018 with the Lions, and now he's with the Saints, which tells me that's insurance in case Alvin Kamara is a no-go in Chicago. So we'll wait and see on that. As I mentioned earlier, the SEC Basketball Media Days are taking place. LSU was at the podium around 1 o'clock this afternoon. Will Wade brought Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays to the podium. And Will Wade said, you know, we averaged 82 points per game last year. I'll be disappointed if we don't score more than that this year. We have got an elite offensive team. Skylar Mays is confident about this team because of the work that they've put in. Listen to him.
Huge expectations. I think we have every reason to be confident based on the work we put in. And, you know, that comes from the top down with how Coach Wade carries himself and, you know, how he instills that confidence in us and, you know, the work ethic and, you know, just the things that we do every day. And then I feel like if we stick to that and keep that confidence and
consistency every
day. And that focus,
yeah.
I think we'll be in great shape and be able to hopefully do it again.
Now, Skylar Mays is an academic scholar. He's thinking about going to med school. And so when asked a question, listen to the vocab word that Skylar Mays used to the confoundedness of the media members of the SEC network.
You know, again, we have a really talented group, and, you know, it's just about amalgamating and figuring that out.
How about that?
First time that word's ever been used.
Say that again.
I don't even know.
Amalgamating.
coming together.
C-E-O.
Can you spell it? Yeah, I can. A-M-A-L-G-A. God, you
maybe.
Maybe.
That's good enough.
Listen, you could say it wrong. We don't know.
Holy smokes. Amalgamating.
I'm using that next segment.
Amalgamated by one Skylar Mays. So, again, I've always said this about basketball. If you have a really good backcourt, you got a chance. If you don't have one, you've got no shot. Guard play, particularly come tournament time, is so prevalent. Ball's in your hand. You got to get it past pressure. You're going to get fouled. You got to make foul shots. You got to make good decisions. You got to be able to do a bunch of things. And I'm telling you, LSU's got a really, really good backcourt led by Skylar Mays, who is their unquestioned leader. He does everything right. He works the hardest. The players look up to him the most. And that's just such a valuable, valuable part. LSU's not going to be nearly as big as they were a year ago with Cavell, Bigby, Williams, and Naz Reid. They're not going to be that type of team. They're going to be, you talk about an exciting team to watch. They're going to be running and gunning and getting after it. Will tells me that Emmett Williams is going to have a breakout season. And so I certainly hope that's the case. Multi-talented, high-energy guy. So this is a team that's going to get it and run. The question is, can they stop enough people? And by that meaning, can they garner rebounds on a consistent basis and not give second-chance opportunities to their opponents? So they may score a lot. The question is, how many points are they going to be giving up? That's the big question mark as we are 23 days away from the start of the college basketball season. It's right around the corner. So hopefully by that time, this LSU football team will remain unscathed. It's an incredible team that keeps on answering the bell week after week after week. The defense is still a work in progress. I don't know if there's any question about that. I think Dave Aranda's trying to find the right mix and the right formula to put in with this club so that they become more consistent and get off the field on third down and not give up big plays. I wonder if that defense kind of takes a breath and goes, it's okay. We gave one up because our offense is going to score three times to that other team's one. I don't know. I think the defense will have to get better. I think it certainly by the time you play Alabama, it's got to get better. You know, a team like Auburn, a team like Mississippi State and Auburn, they can't outscore LSU. So if LSU just controls the football, doesn't turn it over, beat themselves, you're going to win the games. Alabama's a different beast, always has been and always will be. So we'll see. Coming up, hour number two of the program brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best trucks in the business. When the Tigers are traveling to Starkville, come tomorrow, they'll load up that big LSU 18-wheeler powered by a Peterbilt truck, and they'll head to Starkville, Mississippi, with everything in there that you need, depending upon what the weather's like, what kind of cleats you need, and they got everything in there. And they use Peterbilt because it's the most reliable, the most dependable, the most comfortable for long travels. It looks great. safe and sound, and they get them there. It's the best in the business, the best in the industry for years. It's the goal of every truck driver and the dream to own a Peterbilt truck with locations in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lake Charles. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Saints Talk and Hump Day with Huguenin tee off hour number two here on Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Time out. More of the Jordy Helfrich Show, hour number two, straight ahead.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Helfrich.
Hour number two of two on this Wednesday, October 16th. Hello, Acadiana, and welcome. You know, back in 2008, the New York Yankees used their first-round draft pick to select Gerrit Cole. They were prepared to offer him more than $3 million. Cole said no, but only after giving it the same kind of analytical thought he gave to pitching out of trouble at Yankee Stadium last night. He made graphs and charts and added into the value of a college education, and that's how Cole wound up pitching at UCLA rather than in the Yankees' far system. He never even allowed the Yankees to make an offer, and he never even allowed the Yankees to score a run as he went seven scoreless shutout innings against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium to win his 19th straight decision. Gerrit Cole is the best pitcher in baseball right here, right now. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Oh, the Yankees thought they had him, CD, but he's an Astro, and boy, are the Astros fortunate to have Gerrit Cole. What a beast.
They're absolutely blessed to have the man. He was just dominant all afternoon long. It wasn't his greatest performance because his 10-strikeout streak kind of came to an end, but still was looking really good, seven innings of work, and resulting in what we are talking about as a huge win to get that franchise up 2-1 yes. over the New York Yankees. And that day off may have been a lot more beneficial than you think because of the fact you didn't have to throw out the man himself, Jose Urquidy. You're going to wind up having that extra day off, and that way your rotation is set up in a certain way. And yep. I like it a lot, more so because of what's going to happen in Game 5 and potentially Game 6, Jordy, with Verlander and Cole back at it again. Yep. That's going to be absolutely huge if these two teams face off come Saturday night.
Don't you think Greinke's overdue? I mean, man, he is due to have a good game. So we'll see.
I hope he does.
Rain out today, as you mentioned, and my Cardinals were rained out in four. Oh, that was awful. God. Anyway, next.
It was not good at all, Jordy, what we saw last night from the Washington Nationals. It was almost a revenge game, if you will, when you just think about everything that happened last night after the 10-run first inning the Cardinals put together in Game 5 against the Braves just a week ago today. And then they do it 6 days later. The Nationals decide, hey, we're going to score seven runs in the first inning. And pretty much put an end to it early.
I flipped the channel immediately. I got sick in my stomach. But anyway, congrats to the Nationals. I tell you what, with Scherzer and Strasburg and their third pitcher that pitched last night, they're formidable. There's no question. They're hot.
They are without a doubt hot, Jordy. And let's flip it on over, of course, to what everybody's been talking about is the fact that now a lot of the trade, there's been a lot of trading around the NFL, and the biggest one of them all, without a doubt, it's the Jalen Ramsey trade to the Los Angeles Rams. And now it feels like, you know, are we going to start talking about, again, the Los Angeles Rams after they've lost two straight, especially the way that they did in the last two? Are we starting to talk about them being the contenders again?
I think they lose at Atlanta this Sunday. I don't think the secondary is the problem. I think it's their offensive line.
Do you really think the Falcons are actually going to win?
I think the Falcons are due. I think the Falcons are due, and this might be their one game. Wouldn't shock me at all if the Falcons beat the Rams inside the Mercedes-Benz Stadium there in Atlanta. I don't know why they traded Marcus Peters. I mean, if you have Peters and Jalen Ramsey, now you're talking. But, boy, they gave up a they gave up an awful lot to get a guy, and it's amazing. I said it earlier. It's amazing how the back is all of a sudden mysteriously healed up, and he's probably good to go this Sunday. Wasn't good enough, wasn't right to play for Jacksonville, but now that he's with the Rams, yep. I feel better. I'm good to go.
Oh, he's overjoyed about the fact that he gets to play with the Los Angeles Rams. Is all part of his plan all along. And now it's crazy to see everything that's been happening. Meanwhile, you've got the Titans kind of doing a little psych out with Ryan Tannehill being announced the starter over Marcus Mariota week 7. It's crazy to think that the former first-round draft pick for the Tennessee Titans, now he's sitting there on the bench. He's saying that it's not going to end his career, but, man, it's definitely not a good look for a guy who was, a top 2 pick last year. Or a few years ago.
Maybe Tennessee's thinking it's the year of the backup quarterback. Maybe they can strike lightning like the Carolina Panthers have done.
Like the Saints
with
have
Kyle
done.
Allen and what the Saints have done and maybe some of these other teams. Who knows? But Ryan Tannehill was a starter for a while, left Miami, and so he'll get another chance. We'll see what he can do at Tennessee.
It's wild. It's wild what's going on with that. And then, of course, we got to kind of flip it back over to some of the stuff that is going on with the NFL. And Roger Goodell actually talking a little bit about it, saying that the 17-game season is part of the new CBA talks, but also mentioned that it could very well push back the schedule as well, and they'll start the weekend after Labor Day and then play deeper into the month of February. So it's a little weird, but I'm interested to see how that could work out if the 17-game season does actually happen. And also, rumor is they're also trying to think about having a one-game reduction of the preseason. That's why not just get rid of the whole thing?
At the most, 2 games. At the very most, 2 games. Nobody wants to play in them. We'll see. It's got to be give and take and everything when it comes to this collective bargaining agreement. They don't want to go on strike, that's for sure. The NFL doesn't want that. It's too much money in the process. So we'll see what happens. It's, what does this do to NBA scheduling? What does this do to Major League Baseball scheduling? I mean, they're gonna cross over every now and then. So time will tell. We'll see.
Time, I can't wait to see what happens there, because it's going to be something that we're going to be talking about probably for months to come. And I feel like that could wind up being a big sticking point in the negotiations to get this thing going, because it's going to be something that we talk about probably for the next several.
Oh, that's going to happen. It's going to happen. The players don't want to, as long as the money is right and the players get compensated for the extra game, they'll be all for it. Nobody wants the preseason games. Nobody. It's not fair to the fans. It's not fair to the players. It's not fair. It's just ridiculous.
It is a little bit ridiculous, Jordy. And, you know, we were talking about it off air, me and Raymond, before we kind of got underway here. And that was kind of the whole debate about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. I don't know if you checked those out or not. It's definitely something a little bit more lighter side here for a minute, Jordy. The nominees this year are Pat Benatar, Dave Matthews Band, Depeche Mode, The Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Judas Priest, Kraftwerk, MC5, Motorhead, Nine Inch Nails, Notorious B.I.G., Rufus and Chaka Khan, Todd Rundgren, Soundgarden, T-Rex, and Thin Lizzy. Give me at least one that you think is going to be a sure lock to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
If I have a vote, Doobie Brothers.
Doobie Brothers?
Doobie Brothers, absolutely, yes.
I would agree with
one
that.
One of my all-time favorites.
I would agree with that, because they actually have a fan vote that you can actually be a part of to try and get one of these bands or artists in that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Doobie Brothers are definitely one that I voted for yesterday. Yeah. I think the Doobie Brothers did just have like an iconic sound, and the fact they have so many great hits over the years, they definitely deserve to be in it. But it definitely is a stacked lineup for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
You're the music selector of this show. We need to play some of the hits of these nominees, and we'll, as we go to bump breaks and stuff, let's do that for the rest of the week and honor them. I've actually been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's in lovely Cleveland, right there on the lake. There's not much else to do in that cold, forsaken town, but it's a beautiful facility, and it's fun to – it's worth – if you're ever in there, ever in Cleveland, it's fun to see it and relive some of your favorite musicians. It's pretty cool.
There you have it. Pretty cool.
So I want some Doobie Brothers tomorrow. Let's go. Let's make it happen. CD, job well done. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Saints have been using some Cajun Chef. They're 4-0 without Drew Brees, trying to make it 5-0. We'll preview the Saints and the Chicago Bears next here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Time to talk some New Orleans Saints football. They get ready for the late afternoon kickoff at Soldier Field against the Chicago Bears. John Hendricks joins us each and every Wednesday from Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles to share his thoughts on the Saints. John, thanks for the time. I guess we need to start with P.J. Williams suspended for 2 games after pleading guilty to a reduced charge in a DWI arrest. A lot of people are saying, why now when this happened way back in January?
Yeah, look, the NFL doesn't move slow on some stuff. And, you know, it reminds me of the whole David Onyemata situation, where, you know, he gets popped and has the marijuana possession and such. And then, you know, it takes forever for that. And, I mean, sometimes these things and across the NFL, it's never good timing, unfortunately. But, you know, they never forgot about it. I guess they just had other important things that they had to review on the docket. But, look, you know, I mean, all in all, you've got Patrick Robinson, who probably will see a little bit more action, and I would expect Chauncey Gardner-Johnson to fill in and take those snaps. He's already been taking a lot of those snaps, but they're going to miss a guy like Williams, sure tackler right now.
They do have some depth there, and that's great. Good news for Thomas Morstead. He wins his second NFC Special Teams Player of the Week award. What an invaluable weapon he has been.
Yeah, look, I talked to him about it after the locker room a little bit, and after the win in Jacksonville, he's like, you know, look, I just want to point out, I've had 43 punts of all of last year, and I'm over half of them this year. He's at 26, and he's like, you know, the good news is it keeps me on my toes and makes me be a better player and such. But at the same time, you know, a lot of hats off to the coverage team. He was specifically calling out, you know, Justin Hardy and JT Gray for their great coverage. So, look, I mean, again, it's one of those things where you talk about hidden yardage, you talk about unsung heroes, and, you know, when you have a good special teams tandem like Will Lutz and Thomas Morstead, I mean, you know, in this day and age, special teams really matter, and when you have a really good punter, it really matters. He flipped the field more than a few times.
It really, really does. We're talking with John Hendricks about the New Orleans Saints to take on the Chicago Bears this Sunday in Chicago. I guess we won't know much about Alvin Kamara. He's got a high ankle issue, but thinks he might play versus the Bears. But is that – it's got to be the reason why the Saints are working out Bravaris Cadet yet again.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, again, it's a lot of people are losing their minds because of Cadet, and obviously there's some familiarity there, but – look, I mean, look, I tell you, it's something we're going to have to watch on the injury report. We're going to have to see if he's even at practice. I think they'll be a little bit cautious. And, you know, like we talked a little bit about last week, this is with the keys to Jacksonville, that they had to get Latavius Murray going, which I think they did a pretty decent job with. And they still have Dwayne Washington on the roster. I mean, he's a guy who kind of primarily plays special teams, but he can run the ball as well. But, you know, Cadet's more of that pass-catching back like Kamara, if you will. So, look, it's something that we'll have to monitor. You know, the Bears have some players out, too. Kyle Long's out. Akeem Hicks is on IR, too. So, you know, I don't think that they're going to totally work him into the ground. But, you know, it's funny because Peyton had mentioned at the press conference that he said he tweaked his knee during the game. That's why he went to the injury tent. So maybe it was just a smoke screen to really mask it. But Kamara played 39 snaps against the Jaguars. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with him.
Which offense scares – well, maybe that's not the proper word. Which offense presents more problems, Jacksonville's or Chicago's?
You know, I would say the Jaguars had some good weapons coming in, right? And I think DJ Charkey, obviously, 3 weeks in a row, Lattimore is putting the clamps down on wide receivers. So, I mean, that's a great sign. And the run defense, you know, again, they faced Ezekiel Elliott. They faced all these guys in the past 32 contests, just most recently Leonard Fournette. And, look, they're coming out on top. So that's a huge, huge thing. So the Bears, it just depends. Are we looking at Chase Daniel or Mitchell Trubisky? You know, I think from what we've seen, Matt Nagy said he's cautiously optimistic about Trubisky starting. So, again, the Bears have had a lot of issues on offense. They do have weapons. Tariq Cohen, they have David Montgomery, they have Allen Robinson. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of good places that this could end up being a defensive slug match, if you will. Mm-hmm. I still feel like the Saints can figure out a few things and kind of best the Bears here, even though they're not going to be a favorite, and the weather probably is not going to be on their side anyway, too.
Yeah, they're a 3-point underdog. The over-under at 38.5. Are we going to get good Teddy or average Teddy? I think that's the big question mark.
Yeah, look, I think this is one where you got to get at least a good Teddy out of this one because, you know, the Bears are going to be pretty hungry as far as trying to get after Bridgewater. And the thing is, what's crazy to watch when you watch Bridgewater is him just not pulling – the trigger, and I think we talked about this last week, but you know, the thing is with Bridgewater, he doesn't want to make a mistake, but by having that mindset that not throwing the ball, he's still making mistakes by holding on to it too much or not trusting his initial reads or his checkdowns or whatever the case. But you know, look, I think you got to give Jacksonville a lot of credit too because they were smothering all the underneath stuff and all the crossing routes the Saints really like to run to open up their offense. So look, they got to be better. They got to find some guys to get open here. You know, the over 38, I don't know. I'm not feeling too good about it right now. I think it's pretty low-scoring affair, if you will.
I'm with you, John Hendricks of Forbes Sports Canal Street Chronicles. Has the light come on for Jared Cook? I mean, that was his best game as a Saint. I mean, he produced. He had some good blocks on some running attempts. He came up big and had the game-winning touchdown reception.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's really good to see him doing that, right? I mean, you know, and again, if you look at the first couple of weeks, that is an extension of the preseason. I mean, you're just trying to figure out yourself still there, and you got a lot of these people that have come back. And so, look, I think he's showing up, and I think he's only going to get better when Drew Brees comes back into the fold. You know, I think the Saints are still proven, obviously, with them scoring so low and stuff with their differential only being, what, I think a +6 maybe or something along that line, that they can still beat you in a variety of ways. And when they move the sticks, when it counts, you know, that's huge. I mean, that gamble, on one breath you're like, man, what a gamble by Peyton on that third and short. You take Michael Thomas out of the game or whatever, and then you get Jared Cook involved and such. So it works for you, but then – conversely, like, man, Bridgewater almost overthrew him, and he had to make some adjustments there. But so you hold your breath a little bit. So I think it would continue, and you're going to see more of Cook to get more involved as you face the back half of the schedule.
I just see a kicking game here. I see two really good defenses. I think Sheldon Rankins has made a huge difference for this ball club. I think that's helped Marcus Davenport emerged. Cam Jordan's just Cam Jordan. DeMario, it's a really, really sound, aggressive defense. I just see a low-scoring game. I don't see how it's any other way.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't think the Saints defense is still getting credit for what they're doing. You know, look, the forecast might be a little precipitation in the weather, but, I mean, it's going to be, I think, in the high to low 60s. You know, early is going to be in the 50s. So, look, you might have a little bit of a soggy field out there at Soldier. You know, again, you're going to have to convert and take points when you can. You know, and obviously we know how that wind is over there sometimes. So, look, I'm with you. I think it's another low-scoring affair. I'd say the team who can get to 20 points is going to win this game. But it wouldn't shock me if it's like a 17-13 type game or something along that line.
I'm with you. Any new word? What's the latest on Drew Brees?
Well, you know, it's seeing him after the locker room. Obviously, he's not wearing anything on his thumb right now. I mean, if you look at his thumb, it's kind of got some scarring, and you can kind of see it a little bit. Still, to me, and of course, I'm no doctor, but it looked a little bit swollen. It was still there. But, again, he's progressing. He's rehabbing aggressively, if you will. He wants to get back as soon as possible. Look, I don't know if he'll be back before the bye week just because the way the Saints have been playing, you know, being 5-1 right now is just kind of falling in their favor, right? And so I don't think there's a tremendous rush or pressure for right. him to come back. But when he's ready, you know, maybe it's Arizona, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's after that bye.
All right, John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. It's back-to-back road games. Who the fuck the Saints would be 4-0 without Drew Brees? It's just been remarkable. Defense, kicking game has been outstanding. Teddy up, Teddy down, but doing whatever it takes to win. It's a whole new Saints look. Are you of the agreement that when Drew Brees comes back, this offense kicks it back into another gear like it used to be? And this defense remains as staunch as they have been.
Yeah, look, I think it's hard to say otherwise. You know, I think the Saints, we're going to have to pay attention to the deadline, trade deadline. I think we got 2 weeks left on that. So I think that they can look at getting another wide receiver into the mix just because, you know, you got to have other guys step up. And, you know, a lot of people rag on Austin Carr and just in him being in the lineup and such, but look, Teddy missed him a couple times out there, and I think those are throws that Brees makes with the E. So, but they still got to get better, and I still think they're going to roll when he comes back in there.
Jalen Ramsey to the Rams. How about that?
Yeah, pretty crazy. You know, the Saints were rumored to be in on that and get interest, but the price tag that Los Angeles paid was – crazy. I would never think to give up something like that. So, look, I think they're in win-now mode, if you will. Yes. But, look, they're the third-best team in the NFC West right now. I don't care if they're repeating as defending NFC champions or not.
I'm with you. John Hendricks, thank you, buddy. Safe trip to Chicago, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
There you go. That brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best truck in the business. Tigers are traveling to Starkville. They're using a Peterbilt truck to get their equipment there because they know it's going to get there on time. It's going to get there safely. Everything's going to be in place. The most reliable, dependable, most comfortable truck in the business. It's the dream of every truck driver to own a Peterbilt in Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and New Orleans. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Michael Huguenin. All things college football next.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Pump day!
Oh, it's another week of college football that we look forward to, but we always like to look back a little bit with our good friend from The Athletic, Michael Huguenin. Mike, Georgia, Florida, Wake Forest, and Memphis were all unbeaten entering the weekend, but all four now have a blemish on their records. None more shocking than Georgia, and none more thorough, I think, down the stretch than Florida. Crazy weekend of college football. I've got to ask your thoughts first on what you witnessed in Tiger Stadium with LSU with a 48-24 win over a stout defensive Florida Gator Club.
Yeah, I think Florida, the fact that they had no pass rush, that was the death knell for them. Grenard and Zuniga being hurt. Burrow gets the ball out of his hands fast. He didn't need to. He had all day to throw. And when you have all day to throw, you can pick on cornerbacks. It's like when Kyle Trask was throwing to Van Jefferson on the first drive of Florida's second half. They were picking on Stingley. And yes. Because he had time to throw, Stingley's great corner, if you don't have a pass rush, you're going to get beaten, and that's what happened to Florida. I think Florida feels confident that if they had Grenard and Zuniga in a rematch, it would be in a more interesting game. Florida is not as talented as LSU. Florida is not as talented as Georgia. They got to play well every single week. And the Georgia loss, I thought Florida was going to lose. I saw no way Georgia was going to lose. And that was frankly embarrassing, considering that South Carolina was playing its third-string quarterback, a guy who basically couldn't throw. Mm-hmm. And Georgia still lost. And Fromm looked very, very average. And I've been saying all season, I'm not a big believer in Georgia's receivers. And that was an issue last Saturday. Georgia's receivers could not get open against South Carolina. And that's not a good thing. Now, Georgia obviously could still make the playoff. They can win out, and they're going to go. The thing is, that Georgia team last week would lose at least two more games.
Right.
The question, obviously, is at what level is Georgia going to play from here on out? I would argue that their best win, unquestionably, is the Notre Dame win. Playing that level of football that they needed to beat Notre Dame ain't going to beat Alabama and ain't going to beat LSU. I'm not sure it'll beat Florida. Wouldn't beat Ohio State, wouldn't beat Oklahoma, wouldn't beat Clemson. So Georgia needs to prove something, and they better ramp it up, or they're going to basically be wasting a ton of talent.
He's Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Have we not said enough about Wisconsin? They got another shutout Saturday against Michigan State. Now they've got the best scoring defense average, only allowing 4.8 points per game. That's a program with a coach that everybody kind of goes, Wisconsin. But year in, year out, they seem to be right there.
Yeah, they're not a sexy team. They like to run the ball. They like to play physical football. It's the LSU and Alabama blueprint from 2008. And this is a very good defense, very well coordinated by Jim Leonard, former Wisconsin safety who then played in the NFL, really cerebral guy. His defense doesn't have a ton of high-level elite talent, but they play well together. They have a pretty good pass rush. They play aggressive football. And, they've, like you said, they've allowed 29 points in six games. Now, the best team they've played is Michigan. The second best team is Michigan State. So not a good schedule,
right,
truthfully. At the same time, you allow 29 points in six games, you're doing something right, because that means that even in a game like Kent State where they won 48-0 or Michigan State where they won 38-0, they're playing backups. And the backups are keeping guys out of the end zone as well. So I don't think they have the firepower to beat an Ohio State or a Penn State, but I think the defense for Wisconsin would make Ohio State and Penn State stress, because that is a really well-coached defense. Again, not a lot of elite talent, but it's one of the sum of its parts. It's a defense that plays extremely well together, well-coached, and they don't make any mistakes.
Wisconsin, one of 12 unbeaten teams that remain entering this week 8. Alabama, App State, Baylor, Boise State, Clemson, Minnesota, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, SMU, Wisconsin, and LSU. So, who'd have thunk it, right? And you got the two top teams in the country residing in the SEC with Alabama and LSU. Is this the best chance LSU has? I know they've got to get past a couple of more games before they get to that November showdown. And isn't CBS going, why did we pick that? Why did we not pick this game? But is this the best chance for LSU to beat Alabama?
Yeah, in a long time, because this is an LSU team that can outscore Alabama. In the last couple of years, they would have had to win a 10-9 kind of game. Their defense had to come to play at an extremely high level, and even when the defense played well, the offense didn't do anything, and the defense eventually wore down. I would argue this year that the weakness of Alabama and LSU, their defenses aren't high level at all. I think they're solid defenses, top 20 defenses, but they're not top 10, not top 5. It should be a very interesting game. I think the last couple of years, if a team got to 20 when Alabama and LSU played, wow, that team's going to win. This year it might take 35. And I think both defenses are going to have a lot of problems with the other team's offense. It's going to be that is a very interesting game. And I think Ohio State is a team that looks like it could go unbeaten, and the same with Oklahoma. Obviously, I think Alabama or LSU, one of those two teams, could finish unbeaten. It's really difficult to finish unbeaten. I get that. But I think those are the four teams with the biggest chance in the Power Five leagues to finish unbeaten. And the one overriding factor for all four of those teams, they all can score in the 40s or 50s. And that's what it takes these days. You can have phenomenal defense. That only takes you so far. You have to be able to score. And all four of those teams have good quarterbacks, good receivers, good running backs, pretty good offensive lines, and very high-octane offenses.
Has Joe Burrow done enough for you to this point in time at the midway mark of the season? Where is he rank in your Heisman Trophy candidate
list? Yeah, the Athletic does a weekly Heisman ballot among its voters. I'm one of them, and we have Burrow number one, and he's number one on my list right now. He's playing at an extremely high level. Obviously, the Alabama-LSU result is going to go a long way toward the Heisman vote. Because, you know, you can be the greatest player in the world. If your team is 7-5, you ain't getting a Heisman vote. So the more you win, and you know, a guy like Burrow, a guy like Tua, a guy like Jalen Hurts, a guy like Justin Fields, if your team keeps winning, they're going to keep putting up big points. You're the quarterback. You're going to be in the spotlight. So the more LSU wins, the better it is for Joe Burrow and his Heisman, quote-unquote, candidacy. Same thing goes for the other quarterbacks as well. I think Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin is the nation's, obviously, the most productive running back. Yeah. But it's hard for a running back to win these days.
All right, let's talk about some big games. We got three ranked versus ranked games this week. Let's start with number 16, Michigan, at number 7, Penn State. It's going to be the wideout. That's the ABC primetime game. Old Coach Franklin doing it again at Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State plays really good defense. I don't know if people realize how well they are playing defense. They're allowing 1.5 yards per rush, and that's number 2 in the country to Wisconsin. Penn State basically says, you ain't running on us. If you beat us, you're going to have to beat us passing. And if you've watched Michigan play, that's the way to beat Michigan, because Michigan's passing attack is not very good. And, you know, I've talked about this, you and I have talked about this before. LSU and Michigan were the teams in the offseason that everybody said, okay, watch, their offenses are going to adjust to the 21st century. Well, LSU followed through in a big way. Michigan didn't. You watch Michigan play, they don't have an identity. I think Penn State shuts down their running game and basically says, Shea Patterson, beat us with your arm. That ain't happening. So I think Penn State's going to win.
All right. Old Herm Edwards, I was totally, totally wrong about him. I thought, what are they doing at Arizona State hiring this guy? But he's got them ranked 17th in the country. They have a dynamic freshman quarterback. They're at number 13, Utah.
Yeah, Herm Edwards, a great guy, knows a ton about football. But if you watched after he got hired, you know, people ask him about recruiting. He didn't even know recruiting rules.
That's right.
And you're like, what? You're right. What is Arizona State doing? You know, this guy knows a lot about football, but X's and O's only takes you so far. You got to get players. Well, he did a masterful job of putting together a staff, and he is one of those true CEO coaches that I think a lot of assistants want to coach under, because Herm Edwards says, you're my offensive guy, you're my defensive guy, go to work. I am not going to micromanage. Mm-hmm. And Arizona State's defense, despite elite, they don't have elite talent, that's a pretty good group. And you're right, if you haven't seen Jaden Daniels play, the true freshman quarterback, this kid's going to be awesome by the time he's a junior. The problem is Utah is really good. They're really well coached, and they're much more physical than Arizona State. Arizona State's got a really good running back, Eno Benjamin. I think he's going to have a lot of problems running the ball on Saturday. I think Utah wins. Salt Lake City, Utah has a legit home field advantage, one of the few schools in the Pac-12. That is a raucous crowd. They get loud, It's a tough place to play. I think Utah wins. The only problem with that game, it's on Pac-12 Network.
Right.
And if you're a Pac-12 official, you have two ranked teams playing, and like seven people can watch the game on TV. It is beyond ludicrous. Yeah. And it's an example of, you're like, Jaden Daniels, no one's going to be able to see him play. Tyler Huntley, no one's going to be able to see him play. Utah's got a really good running back, Zach Moss. Huge game, no one's going to be able to see him play. But yet, no, Utah is, I think Utah wins because they are more physical and they are playing at home.
The other Pac-12, ranked versus ranked, number 12, Oregon, at number 25, Washington. Two teams that maybe have, I don't know, underachieved, maybe?
Well, I think there's no question Washington's underachieved. I think Oregon, if they were to play Auburn again, would beat them. Oregon in that first game was still sort of finding its way, especially with its receiving core. The receiving core now is a little bit healthier, though they have lost their tight end. Their tight end was the best tight end in the country. Jacob Breeling is out for the year. He hurt his knee. Oregon is another team, defensively, they've allowed one touchdown since they played Auburn. One touchdown in 5 weeks. Again, I don't care who you're playing, it's incredible. They've allowed single-digit points 5 consecutive weeks. It's the first time that school has done that in 61 years. And again, you know, you're playing. They're playing backups in the third and fourth quarters. That is a extremely well-coached defensive unit. Two big-arm quarterbacks too. You got Jacob Eason. You got Justin Herbert. And I'll be honest. I'm thinking if I'm Jacob Eason, if I'm Justin Herbert, and I watch LSU play, if I watch Alabama play, yeah. I'm thinking, my goodness, if I was in that offense, I'd be putting up 500 yards a game, because Herbert has a cannon and Jacob Eason has a howitzer. If there's a stronger arm in the country than Jacob Eason's, I don't know what it is. But Washington's offense is not good because it's not well coached. Oregon, I think they're trying to do some things, but as LSU knows, if you want to throw the ball, you got to have good receivers. LSU has good receivers. Oregon really doesn't. So even though they are healthier, I think before the season, this was considered the biggest Pac-12 game of the year. But Washington's already lost twice. So if Oregon wins on Saturday in Seattle, they basically win the Pac-12 North. And Washington's another school, though. Man, Washington, Utah, and Oregon have fervent fan bases. So, and I think people look at, oh, Washington, Washington State, that's the big rivalry. No, Washington, Oregon, when both teams are good, there is genuine hatred there. So it's going to be nasty for Oregon to go in. But I think they're going to get the win because I have no trust, no faith in Washington's offense.
Well, let's go to the AAC, a really good one. Willie Fritz has done a heck of a job wherever he goes. He's done a great job at Tulane. They're 5-1 overall, 2-0 in conference play. They take on Memphis in Memphis. The Tigers are 5-1, 1-1. In the AAC. You got to deal with Fritz and that offense.
Yeah, there's two big games in the AAC this weekend, Temple SMU and Tulane Memphis. And given that UCF's lost twice, they're out of the, I think almost surely out of the New Year's Six picture. So that means Temple SMU, Tulane, and Memphis are still in it, as is Boise State, as is Cincinnati. Tulane is well coached. I think if I'm a Tulane fan, I'm A, worried about losing Willie Fritz.
Yes.
B, if Fritz stays, Will Hall ain't going to be there again, because Will Hall is going to move on as well. He's a really high-level offensive coordinator. Been hearing stuff about him since he was the coach at West Alabama. He knows what he's doing. Really cool offensive mind. Memphis does some good things offensively, too, with Mike Norvell. That's going to be, I think, a pretty high-scoring game. I think if the winner's going to have to score mid-30s to get the victory. I think Tulane overall is better coached. I think Memphis has better talent. So that plus playing at home, I think Memphis gets the win. But I also think, again, Temple SMU is gigantic. Sonny Dykes doing a great job at SMU. And Temple, Rod Carey, in his first year, the guy used to be at Northern Illinois, he's done a pretty good job as well. So, you know, in SMU, I think everybody has to have a soft spot in their heart for SMU, because this is the first time they've been ranked since they were given the death penalty 32 years ago. So that's a pretty big game in the AAC as well. So the AAC has two gigantic games this weekend.
Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Let's get to the SEC a couple of ones. Who handles their situation better, Florida handling adversity or South Carolina handling success, the Gators at Columbia this Saturday?
Yeah, it's a noon kickoff. I don't think anybody likes noon kickoffs, especially when you're a visiting team. And Florida has said Zuniga and Grenard are game-time decisions, which to me means they ain't playing. So that's Florida's defense takes a gigantic hit when those guys don't play. Now, that said, South Carolina's defense played well last week. I still think Florida can move the ball on them. And South Carolina's offense is still nothing to write home about. The problem last week for Georgia, they could not control the interior of South Carolina's defensive line. If Florida does that, they should win even without Grenard or Zuniga. But the longer this game goes, though, close, the better chance South Carolina has of pulling an upset again, though. I think any team coached by Will Muschamp, if it has to score points, it can't do it. Last week was more a massive failure by Georgia than anything South Carolina. South Carolina hung around and hung around and hung around and won. Florida can't allow that to happen this week.
LSU, no trouble, real quickly, at Mississippi State?
No, Mississippi State is not good, and there's already rumblings that Joe Moorhead would not mind leaving. I think he is realizing this is not a great fit for me. I think LSU, there's going to be a letdown because last week's game was gigantic. Mississippi State's horrible. How are we going to blow these guys out of the water? So I think it will be interesting for a while maybe, but if LSU eventually gets on the beam, Burrow could throw for 450 if he wants to.
Is there an upset alert, Texas A&M at Ole Miss maybe?
You know, the Ole Miss two quarterback system is extremely interesting to me. I'm not sure why they're doing it, but I guess it's to try to keep both Plumlee and Matt Corral happy. A&M should win. Who knows, though? I mean, this A&M team, I think the running game is basically non-existent because Jayshon Corbin got hurt early, and they're having a ton of trouble getting the ball down the field moving with their running game. So I still think A&M wins, but I think it could be closer than people think. I think the interesting game is Kentucky-Georgia. How does Georgia bounce back, and does Kentucky really go with Lynn Bowden at quarterback? I mean, I know he had success last week against Arkansas. My assumption, though, is Georgia is going to be coming out spitting nails, and I think Georgia could just put a massive beat down on UK.
I agree. Michael, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, man.
Mike Huguenin of The Athletic. You can win VIP tickets to the 13th Gate, the ultimate haunted attraction in Baton Rouge. VIP means no waiting in line. You walk right into the place where your worst nightmare comes to life. Enter to win in 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com for your chance for VIP tickets to the 13th Gate, the ultimate haunted attraction in Baton Rouge. Back to wrap things up next. Welcome back. The Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything you need for your tailgating needs and your travel needs, including that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with the best cheeseburger ever. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It was on this day, October 16th, the year 2003. He's in the dugout now as a manager, but back then, Aaron Boone hit a walk-off home run in Game 7 against the Boston Red Sox to win the American League Championship Series for the Yankees and to send the Bronx Bombers to the World Series. On this day, October 16th, the year 2013. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. I hope you share. Have a great one. You share it with singer John Mayer, who is 42 years old today. Let's see. Anybody else of noteworthiness? Flea is 57. How about that? All right. Special thanks to Matt Stoltz, Chris Truax, John Hendricks, Mike Huguenin. Tomorrow on the program, the Schwab will give us his thoughts on another week in the NFL, plus all kinds of college football talk as well. CD, thank you so much to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.